During the latter half of the 20th century, no entity affected independent film more than the Sundance Institute. Both through its annual festival and through its educational arm, Sundance has become a brand that is closely associated with a certain kind of movie. I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101. And in this week's show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbin, and I will discuss a trio of movies that in one way or another scream Sundance. One, Blaze, is playing at the Magic Lantern, and two others, The Land of Steady Habits and Private Life, we saw courtesy of Netflix. So don't touch that dial, because a Sundance-minded Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
When you hear us say, listener-supported public radio, what are we really saying? Public radio is shorthand for thought-provoking, well-crafted, stimulating programs. Listener-supported means it's your money that pays for those programs. And not only the programs, but the transmitters, the computers, the electricity, everything it takes to bring you those programs. So here's a very large thank you to you, the listener, in listener-supported public radio.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that boasts two members who, for a decade, made an annual pilgrimage to Park City, Utah, home of the Sundance Film Festival. At least they did until the experience got a bit too pricey, even for adults who have their own money. Nevertheless, we got a good feel for what the festival had to offer, and we still pay attention when a film opens boasting bona fide Sundance credentials. That goes for two of the films that we'll be discussing during this show. We'll discuss Blaze, an Ethan Hawke-directed biopic of the late singer-songwriter Blaze Foley, and Private Life, the Tamara Jenkins study that opens Sundance 2018. We'll also look at The Land of Steady Habits, the latest film from writer-director Nicole Holofcener. Let's begin, though, with Hawke's look at a tortured musical soul. The name Blaze Foley doesn't exactly headline the list of great country-based singer-songwriters. In fact, if it weren't for his pals, a few better-known performers such as Townes Van Zandt and Merle Haggard, and now writer-director Ethan Hawke, Foley, who died in 1989 at the tender age of 39, likely wouldn't be remembered at all. Hawke's movie, which is based on a memoir written by Foley's one-time girlfriend, Sybil Rosen, stars musician Ben Dickey as the title character, and Dickey's performance won him a Sundance Jury Acting Prize. So let me pose a couple of questions to you two. How good is Dickey, and how good is Hawke's film?
Well, I think they're both very good, and I walked into Blaze not knowing who Blaze Foley was or who Ben Dickey was. So here I am watching this life sort of unfold in front of me and hearing these songs that a couple of which I felt like I had heard before, because a lot of Foley's stuff has been covered by people like Merle Haggard or Lyle Lovett.
Lucinda Williams.
Yeah, lots of people have covered him. And then seeing this actor who, as far as I knew, they found him off a street somewhere, found him in some audition. I had no idea who he was. He is a musician first, and this is his first real acting gig. And I thought he was great. I mean, Ben Dickey, I don't know what his future is going to look like, but I think that based on this, he's got a bright one. I really liked this movie a lot. I've grown a bit weary of the musical biopic format because it seems like we've seen a lot lately, more so than usual. They just kind of follow the same pattern. And I think that this one, Blaze, nicely upends some of the conventions that we expect and the structure that we expect of a biopic, even though Blaze Foley's own life, as we learn in the film, and as I learned afterward when I did more reading on him, really did kind of unfold like a standard biopic. I mean, he had the wife, played by Aaliyah Shawkat in the film, and she co-wrote the screenplay of this movie with Ethan Hawke, who was left at home and started to resent the talents that made her fall in love with this guy in the first place. He's got his personal demons because he's drinking like a fish. I mean, he's drunk pretty much every night, and then
and
drugs become
involved. Snorting anything he can put
Absolutely.
Up his nose.
He's surrounded by people that probably don't have his best interests in mind, even while all of the friends that have started with him from the bottom are telling him that he needs to get his act together and he won't listen to them. And then you've got just the general idea of this career that seemed to be burning bright and then was snuffed out before it could really go anywhere. And all of that sounds, just the basic boilerplate of Blaze, sounds like you've seen this movie before. And in some ways you have. But I think that Ethan Hawke, who has only directed two or three movies before this, the way that he decided to tell this story, I think, really elevates this material. And I think that at the heart of it, you've got Ben Dickey, who has the benefit, because I think a lot of people in the audience aren't going to know who Blaze Foley is. He's a pretty underground figure still to this day. And he has the advantage of that, so that we're not comparing his performance to somebody that we've seen a million times
on TV
or in public.
Really,
but he's
important.
So good.
Yeah, because I think that when you have a celebrity or a movie star or an A-list actor play the individual. So we're thinking, oh, does Joaquin Phoenix really look like Johnny Cash?
Or does Ethan Hawke himself look like Chet Baker?
Right.
Remember, he played Chet
right.
Baker
and
in
so,
that bio.
Yeah, so I think you're on to something here, because I think this movie, Blaze, benefited from having this unknown person who's clearly talented in his own right. And so we weren't looking for him to inhabit this character in the way that we might typically do. In many respects, Blaze was a love story to this individual who, for reasons that are somewhat clear in this film, couldn't quite transcend his problems in order to hit the big time, because I think it's clear that he potentially had the talent to do that.
Right, but there's also the suggestion that he was destined to never get that far anyway, because just his own personality, his own volatility that was exacerbated by the alcohol that he was consuming made it impossible for him to ever get beyond just being this curiosity that
but
the country nerds
know. But at the same time, he had these bandmates who were really loyal to him, even subsequently. So that's why I had concluded ultimately that he was a good person, I guess.
Yeah. I think so too,
You know, I think it's interesting to talk about the structure of the film, to elaborate on what you were talking about, Nathan, because there are basically three things that go on here. And the movie's based upon the book that Sybil Rosen wrote. So a lot of the structure is based upon their early time together, the year they spent living in a house in the woods in Georgia someplace. Then a large part of the film is based upon an interview that Ronnie Spector playing Towns Van Zandt and Josh Hamilton playing an amalgam of Blaze Foley's other friends. They're being interviewed on a radio show.
By
and
Ethan Hawke. Off camera,
Yes, and I didn't realize that. Particularly the Towns Van Zandt character is telling tall tales about Blaze Foley. And then the other one is interweaved in here is the progression of him from a young man to the middle-aged man, the guy who discovers his talent, the guy who discovers drink, who falls into desperate times, and then who basically self-destructs.
But there is another thread that is running through it that I think is maybe its most interesting and genre convention busting, which is supposedly the last night of Blaze Foley's life. In reality, it's some barroom gig in Texas, I think. In reality, it was, I think, a month before his actual death, but this movie compacts it down into one night. And Hawke keeps returning to that evening. So you get these performances, you sort of get an idea for what his audience generally would have been like, which is just people that just want to get drunk and there's background music. They don't really care about him.
And they're yelling for, you know, Neil Young.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, when's Towns going to show
and
up?
And he doesn't want to play any of that. And then as he keeps returning to that night, he sort of turns his attention towards other people that are lurking around him in the bar, the people that
who
are working behind the bar.
The director, Hawke does this.
Right,
yes,
exactly.
Yes.
And so we meet these unnamed supporting characters that are just sort of floating around. And I think that the niftiest thing that he's doing here is he's made a film about country music that is a country song sort of unto itself, or several country songs.
Well, that's
because you've got all these people, you know,
the
guy
who
just, he's got this job he doesn't like, he just wants to have a smoke break, and the bartender that doesn't want to be there, and the waitress that's getting hit on by the customers, and the customers themselves who are just there to drown their sorrows. So you've got all of these people that are sort of in his orbit that crossed his path but never really had a chance to change his life in any significant way.
And there are flashbacks in this film, but they don't really feel like flashbacks. They feel almost like parallel lives in a sense. The other thing we haven't talked about is his relationship with his girlfriend, or perhaps wife. I think that they had a legal wedding ceremony.
Yeah, they do get
married
at
some
point.
Yeah, it wasn't entirely clear.
Well, in the movie, but it's not clear in the history whether that was a legal marriage.
Okay. Right, exactly.
It was a ceremony.
They jumped the broom, you may remember.
Right.
So I liked that aspect of this, mainly because I liked Alia Shawkat's performance, and we don't see her enough necessarily.
And not in drama,
yeah,
for sure.
No. Yeah, exactly. And I think she's, that it really
We know her
did,
mostly from Arrested Development, correct? I mean,
yeah.
Right, go ahead.
Yeah.
The television
and I think, yeah, and I think that here you have two artists, and you know she's sort of stepping aside or stepping back to allow him to advance his career. And he's struggling to do that. And then at some point she decides, hey, I've got to mm-hmm. sort of go my own way and do my own thing. And we get the impression at the end of the film that indeed that's happened. Although she still has a great deal of affection for him, it was just not going to work.
Yeah, there's a scene near the end of Blaze where they meet up again after being separated for a long time. And she comes to one of his gigs and it's, of course, a
and
disaster.
Apparently that's based on truth.
I believe
she
it.
Did
I mean,
go
it,
to the
it
Chicago
has a,
gig.
It has the wound of truth to it.
Right.
And I like the fact that Shawkat doesn't play it the way that I think a lot of writers would have written it, which is the downtrodden wife who steps aside. But she has her own talents and her own ambitions and realizes that even though she loves this guy, it's not her job to fix him.
Right. And, you know, I mean, we've talked about Ben Dickey, who is marvelous in this film. Mm-hmm. As you say, Nathan, I don't know whether he can do anything else, but he certainly is really good here. Alia Shawkat was really good. But come on, what about Ronnie Spector as Townes Van Zandt?
Well, no, it's Charlie Sexton is his name.
Charlie Sexton.
Ronnie Spector is the lead singer of
yeah,
the
yeah,
Ronettes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry, sorry.
Charlie but that would have been an interesting...
It would have been. Would it. How about Tom Hardy as Venom?
Well, he's uncanny, and he has an uncanny
Charlie
resemblance
Sexton.
To the real Townes Van Zandt. But that is a really good performance, too, and one that I think could have easily been overshadowed, and it isn't here.
Mm, yeah. And that was Blaze. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at two other independently made films, Private Life and The Land of Steady Habits. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mayor Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Blaze, a film about the late singer-songwriter Blaze Foley that is part of an industry sometimes referred to as Sundance Darlings. That's Sundance, as in the annual Sundance Film Festival, which takes place every February in Park City, Utah. Let's now move to another movie that debuted at Sundance 2018, Tamara Jenkins' Private Life, plus one that did not play at Sundance, but might have, had it not been purchased by Netflix. Nicole Holofcener's The Land of Steady Habits. Let's begin with a trek to the streets of Manhattan. Though she's been active as a screenwriter, she had a hand in writing the recent film Juliet Naked, Tamara Jenkins hasn't directed a film since 2007's Savages. Private Life, which she both wrote and directed, is another plunge in urban living. It's focused this time on a married couple, Rachel and Richard, played respectively by Catherine Hahn and Paul Giamatti, who have long wanted to have a baby. Nothing has worked, though, from fertility therapies to surrogacy. Then the stepdaughter of Richard's brother enters the picture, and so Jenkins' study of contemporary angst, which at times is actually quite funny, grows ever more complicated.
I was a reluctant viewer of this film because, I don't know, there was something about the premise that was off-putting to me, and maybe because of the This Is Us TV series.
Ugh.
Nathan just grunted or groaned or something.
Watched, I think.
Yeah. Right, exactly. There's a similar plot line going on in that particular series. And so it just seemed like something that was more made for a TV movie or something than the plot point of serious film. But I was wrong because I really appreciated this film a lot more than I expected. Paul Giamatti, he's typecast in some ways in terms of this befuddled, frustrated male character. But here, we see him as someone who had this artistic career, had started this theater that was this avant-garde theater and so forth. And obviously, that wasn't really working out financially, it would seem. And he sort of transitions to this other business, which is making pickles. And we actually do know someone in Brooklyn who makes pickles, Rick's Picks, if you happen to see them in some supermarket. But he seems okay with that. And Catherine Hahn's character is a writer. She has a book coming out. They have this comfort level with one another, but they're missing something. And I think we are left saying, well, why don't you adopt? Well, we do find out why they're reluctant to adopt, because they had this heartbreaking experience, a scam of sorts that was pulled on them in that regard. And so now they're struggling from enhanced methods of technology to approach childbearing. And I thought it was sweet and heartfelt, but still at different points sardonic. But the most important
sometimes laugh out loud funny.
Right. But the most important thing about this film is the performance by the stepdaughter. And I'm completely unfamiliar with this particular actress, Kaylee Carter, because she is really the focal point of the film. And this could have gotten maudlin or gone sideways, and not to.
No pun intended.
Yeah, right, for
Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti. But she just holds it together. You think something weird is going to happen. You're waiting for something weird to happen in terms of her relationship with the two lead characters, especially the husband and so forth. And it doesn't play out that way. And she's just great. And I love to see her again. Nathan just mentioned that she's going to be playing Squeaky Fromm in an upcoming
Indie Manson family movie.
And
I don't know
what that'll be worth waiting for, in my opinion.
She fits the type. Yeah. I mean, I think that other worse films and TV shows, read This Is Us, have conditioned us to see a plot line like the plot that we have in Private Life and automatically think melodrama or cheap pathos or manipulation or even some kind of sick thriller. And you're right, we are sort of on edge for a little bit because the weird, precarious situation that these three people are in, we're just waiting for the bottom to fall out eventually.
And the relationship with the other people, the other relatives.
And the niece's parents as well, when they're going to get involved. We keep waiting for it to veer somewhere dark or uncomfortable.
And they address that specifically at one point when the Catherine Hahn character is saying, you think that I'm the character from Rosemary's Baby. That's how you're treating me.
She calls him Guy Woodhouse.
Exactly.
At some point.
So hilarious.
But this mostly stays in the realm of human reality. And human reality is often funny and uncomfortable and sad. But somehow Jenkins, and she did this in The Savages, which is the last movie she made and is a movie that I really liked.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman and Laura Linney. And that was a film about these rough characters trying to deal with their father who's plunging into dementia. And it sort of had a dark comedy running through it, but it seemed totally believable. And she manages that balancing act here. I'm not totally sure how she does it, but I think it's just because her screenplay is based on all of these little moments, these sort of offhand comments that people make, the arguments that the people get into, that seem completely real. I often bristle at films that are supposed to be about real life but are about bourgeois intellectuals in New York because it seems like a completely fantasy zone. Yeah, Woody Allen, for instance.
Yeah.
But I really liked both Giamatti and Hahn in this movie. I thought that they brought a vulnerability to these roles that we don't often see from them or in roles like this. So I like this a lot. And I second your enthusiasm for Kaylee Carter, who I'd never seen before. But she's so good and so funny and so warm in this movie. And yeah, I liked Private Life a lot. It's a Netflix release, so that's how we all saw it.
Yeah, exactly. And that was Private Life. Let's close with The Land of Steady Habits. Like Tamara Jenkins, Nicole Holofcener has been absent from the big screen for a while, since 2013's charming Enough Said, actually. But following a lot of television work, Holofcener returns with this adaptation of Ted Thompson's 2014 novel about a guy who, tired of his former life, discovers that he can't let go of it. Not of his former wife, not of his former friends, and friends are distinctly rendered here in quotes, not even of his former house. Australian actor Ben Mendelsohn plays our rootless protagonist Anders, Edith Falco, his ex-wife Helene, and Thomas Mann, perhaps best known for the 2015 film Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, plays their son Preston. And I gotta tell you, for every good thing that we had to say about private life, I would say the exact opposite of this movie. This is one of those movies. The Land of Steady Habits, it's a euphemism that people use for Connecticut, for that commuter life that people live that John Cheever wrote about so well, and that has been the staple of movie after movie after movie. And just as private life captured, say, that New York intellectual living experience with imagination, with actual poignancy, I think that The Land of Steady Habits is just basically a mishmash of a lot of characters running together. Not a single one, not even the young son who's graduated from Northwestern University and who's living at home with mom at 27 and who can't make it. Every single one of them, I just didn't like any character at all in The Land of Steady Habits. And I think that this is Nicole Holofcener's first movie that she didn't write and direct. She adapted it. She did write it, but she adapted it from Ted Thompson's novel. And I think that that put her into
a box
that she couldn't get out of. And it just irritated the hell out of me.
Yeah, I mostly agree with you here. I mean, it sort of lost me when it opens with Ben Mendelsohn picking up all of these
lonely
soccer moms at Bed Bath & Beyond. And I was thinking, what world does this movie exist in?
I mean,
as it went on, I do have to say that I was won over a little bit by his character because I like Ben Mendelsohn so much. It's nice to see him in a role where he's not some kind of weirdo or psychopath, because that's usually what he plays.
Or king.
Right, exactly. Or a weird psychopath king. And I thought that he's prickly, but he does have a warmth there. And I thought that he channeled that really well. He has this really troubling relationship with one of his son's friends who also has drug problems.
Which becomes the focal point of the movie.
Of the second half of the movie.
It drives the narrative.
I almost wish that the whole thing had been about that. And they had just gotten rid of the stuff with the ex-wife, the Edie Falco character, and her new husband.
And his son.
None of those characters ever really go anywhere. But I thought as the movie chugged along, and his relationship with Connie Britton, which feels really half-baked.
Yeah, no kidding.
As one of the women he tries to pick up in Bed Bath & Beyond.
And it's so funny because all these TV stars, you know, Connie Britton, Edie Falco, Elizabeth Marvel show up in this film, and it's almost like they tossed all these people together and said, I hope this works. I just thought that the casting was not off, but just a little...
But they're all good actors.
No, that's what
I'm
saying. But whether it was the script or whatever, I struggled with this too. And that's why I was really disappointed. As surprised as I was by Private Life, I was disappointed in this because I think Nicole Holofcener has real talent. And she didn't have the opportunity to demonstrate that. And I agree with you. I thought the relationship between Ben Mendelsohn's character and his friend's son was really intriguing, because I think a lot of us find ourselves in situations where we have these sort of extended family relationships and these intergenerational connections that may be mutually beneficial in so many ways. And this one, you just were like, this is not one of those.
I thought that stuff worked.
Right. Remember,
but not much else.
Nicole Holofcener's last movie, Enough Said, with
Julie Louis-Dreyfus
and James Gandolfini. Mm-hmm. That was just a perfect little movie. And it was, unfortunately, I think Gandolfini's final performance. But that showed what this woman can do if she writes her own stuff.
I mean, and that movie did have some sitcom trappings that I thought hindered it a little bit. This movie is mostly sitcom trappings, but within the style of some kind of suburban drama. It's a nightmare. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And that was The Land of Steady Habits. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed Ethan Hawke's Blaze and Tamara Jenkins's Private Life. Let's take this moment to thank Jim Tevenin for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again search for great cinema wherever we can find it. Until then, remember this quote, widely attributed to singer Britney Spears. Sundance is weird. The movies are weird. You actually have to think about them when you watch them. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.